Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. Okay, Brett, we are on number 26 of the Glum Lot Podcast episodes, and I wanted to tell our readers something very interesting. We are heard throughout the world, as our readers know. We get our stats back from our platform, and it tells us that we have X amount of downloads in Canada, U.S., England, Germany, Ireland, India, and we just got our first three downloads in Russia.
Russia?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, da.
Here he goes again with this.
So, I mean, it is in English, so they got to be English speaking, I'm guessing. And we have Philippines, Australia as well.
You know, I think there's drunks all over the world.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
And there is sobriety throughout the world, too, which is the saving grace, right?
Yeah, and talk about grace. I'm so grateful for the opportunity, too, just to be able to, you know, put something out there that people seem to want to listen to.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And hopefully that's helping some people. So.
And our guests only use their first names. They do retain their anonymity.
Yeah, we do.
And they only talk
can.
About what they want to talk about. So, you know, we love having people on. It's not for everyone, but, you know, I think the message is getting out there and it's going to help someone.
And right? I know when I came into the rooms, it was people's stories that got me into the rooms and staying into the
it
rooms.
It is, really
simple
is.
As that, especially in the beginning. You know, people were talking about these steps and this higher power stuff, but nothing really hit like somebody's true story that sounded just like me.
That experience, strength, and hope resonates.
Yeah.
And with the newcomer, it makes all the difference.
Oh, I definitely. Think. It helped me realize that this is a disease that we have.
Yeah.
And not a disgrace.
Right. And you know, you hear through the stories, we do disgraceful things.
Sure.
Under the influence of alcohol and because we are alcoholics.
And people treat us like that too,
but
you know.
We are not a disgrace.
No.
We have a disease that, when gone without treatment, has bad effects. But I got to say this for myself, and this is only for myself, and I've heard people say this. I'm glad I'm an alcoholic only because of the gifts I've received from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh.
I would have never received those gifts.
100%
so
true.
So out of a terrible, terrible disease comes something good.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we heard, I'm so, like you just said, I'm glad I'm alcoholic because I learned a new way of life
right.
that I wish I had learned when I was a kid.
I wish I had this design for life
The design.
Up.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was literally taught to me by the people in the rooms.
Right. They taught me how to live. They taught me because when I came into these rooms, I was about 10 years old emotionally and maturity-wise.
Yeah. So, out of a terrible disease come some great, great things that can help people rise to a life beyond their wildest dreams. And that's true for me and it's true for you.
Yep.
And it's true for multitudes of sober people throughout the world. So. We are the world. We
are the
children.
We are the children.
And with that, we have a fantastic guest. This guy, it helps so many people. I know he's very involved in the rehab locally here.
Yeah.
He works with people when they hit the ground out the door of the rehab, and that's so important. And he's just such a loving, wonderful person.
I definitely just like to hug him.
He's a great dude. And without further ado, let's welcome Mike.
Mike!
Mike, welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm honored that you asked me.
Well, I'm honored to have you here. And let's start with your sobriety date.
It is October 1 of 2000.
Awesome.
My second
Your second surprise.
My second green date.
Just out of curiosity, what is your first one?
Is February 2nd of 99.
Oh, okay. So you had a year there where you were testing the waters. I did the same thing for 6 months. So let's go back to your first experience with drugs and alcohol. Do you remember it?
Yeah, the details.
How old were you? Were you a kid?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I'm high school.
Yeah.
Listen, growing up, alcohol was in our family, and it was growing up Catholic, all of our holidays and everything, yeah. There was alcohol. It wasn't crazy drinking and what have you, but it was in our family, and I knew it was just going to be part of my life.
Yeah.
Because that's how I grew up. Now, way fast forward, when we started to have fun with it, and experiment with it, high school, drinking in the cemetery.
The cemetery again.
Yeah. You're not the first.
Yeah.
Well, when you're a kid and you need a good place to hide from people— The cemetery is a good place to go.
There's nobody going to bother
you. It's either
you.
The woods or the cemetery.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody sees you, and nobody's going to tell on you.
Right. All the people that are going to tell on you are dead.
Yeah, exactly.
So you start experimenting, trying out booze. Yeah. Do you remember your first buzz?
Oh, God, yeah. one of the guys, he was big enough, he could buy beer. We split a six-pack. Oh, my God, we split a six-pack of beer, okay, three beers, and you catch a buzz.
Oh, yeah.
And, wow, was that a great feeling.
Yeah?
Because of where it took me, just that little buzz, and it brought me to just a whole new place of being able to get along with people and talk and interact. And
so that's something you struggled with prior to that.
Well, I did. Yeah, I did. I was not an achiever. I was not a jock. I was not a leader. There was nothing special about me, but I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be with all the right people.
Mm-hmm. And so this gave you a level of comfort.
Of comfort, of confidence, of belonging, of being part, and funny.
Ooh, me too.
And funny.
That was me.
And funny. Yeah. And funny.
You got funnier. The more you drank, the funnier you thought you were, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the more the people you were with drank, the funnier you thought you were too, probably.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So that was your end. That was your social end, right?
Unbelievably, yes.
Yes.
It sure was.
So
it sure was.
You continued to drink throughout high school, here and there?
Not here and there, every weekend.
Oh, well, here and there every weekend.
Every weekend. And then I was able to have my night license at 17 because we had to take, Mom made us take driver ed. So I had my driver's license at 17, and Dad was very generous. He would let me take the car all the time.
Wow.
On the weekend. You know.
Now, the drinking age at the time is 18, right?
Yep, it was 18. And so I'd cruise the city, pick people up, and we'd go to the cemetery, or we'd go to one of our local bars that we could get into and drink like crazy. And then I would take everybody home. And
so at the time, it seems as though this is completely normal behavior.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? Not a big deal.
Having fun with friends.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a rite of passage of becoming an adult.
100%. Yeah. It's what we do. Yeah.
Experiment with smoking weed or anything at the time, too?
Oh, my God. I remember when my buddy called me freshman year. I remember being down in the den at my house. And Steve called me and said, hey, you want to go in on a nickel bag? And I was like, oh, my God, that's drugs. Oh, my God, no. All right, yeah. And so we went in on a nickel bag.
And you know
bag.
What? Back in the day, a nickel bag was $5.
Yep.
I mean, granted, it's not the weed they have today. It was shag weed. It was kind of crappy. But for $5, you got a decent bag of weed, and you and your friends could sit around, roll some joints, and you would get high.
Let me tell you, it took me the longest time to get high.
Yeah.
Because it was such shit weed.
Yeah, I mean,
it really was.
And you know
what?
Same thing with me. Is the first couple times I smoked weed, I did not get high.
Me neither.
And then I remember the first time I did get high because I had smoked, I think, three times, and I'm like, I don't know what these people see in this shit because it's not doing anything for me.
Yeah.
And then my friend and I rolled this fatty, and we smoked it in his garage when his parents weren't home. And I thought, oh, yeah, no big deal again. I'm not feeling anything. And then we walked over to my house, and to get down in the basement of my house, and all of a sudden, it punched me right in the face. And I was high AF. And I was like, holy shit. And I literally held on to something. I'm like, Oh my God!
Yeah, I mean, I remember my first time, and I haven't. This part is not part of my story, but I have smoked pot a couple times. But my first time, well, I almost died because I couldn't breathe because I was laughing so hard because my first time was seeing George Carlin live, I thought I was literally going to die. I could not get out of the giggles.
Wow, that's a real old. Wow. That's a real old school story.
Yeah,
George Carlin, shit.
Yeah.
So it's a progressive thing, right?
Oh yeah.
So tell us about your progression.
Well, then we stayed like that, drinking every weekend, getting all kinds of messed up, and I was getting to the point where I'd forget driving you home. I forgot driving you home last night.
Oh,
and
no.
So that was part of my story the next day, you know, and I thought it was funny and cute. And, oh, I did that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're starting to gray out a little bit.
Yeah, and I had some friends that were finally like, hey, you better watch it. And so I just stopped telling them I blacked out.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch it. I'm just not going to tell you about it.
Well, you weren't worried about it, or were you?
No.
Not even a little bit?
No, no, because I was getting everybody home, and it was
a good night.
It was part of it.
Yeah. Good night.
And see, one of the things I know today, that I wasn't really addicted to alcohol back then, but I just drank it, and I didn't have a great capacity for quantity.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take an awful lot for me to get shit-faced and blacked out.
A little bit was enough. Huh?
Oh, boy. And so we did it every weekend. Way fast forward to getting introduced to cocaine.
How old were you?
I was, 19 or 20 when we got into that.
And you and I are probably close to the same age. And I remember when I was in high school, no one did cocaine.
No.
No one did opiates. A couple kids had done acid, but it was pot and booze. It was pot, drinking and smoking dope. That was it.
Right.
Anything more, and you were kind of like on the edge of being an addict, or we considered a drug addict, and it was something you did not want to do.
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding? Being Jimi Hendrix?
Yeah.
That kind of drug addict?
Yeah.
And
then,
needles?
And then the late 70s, early 80s, the coke boom was insane, and it was everywhere. And that's when I was introduced to it as well.
Yeah, well, I was a little bit in the 70s. Because I was certainly, out of high school, graduated 76. 78, 9.
Yeah.
Got introduced to it. And it was fun, man. Once I got that, I thought, oh.
Now, have you been in any trouble prior to that?
None
of that was going on yet.
Nope. There was no trouble.
Cool.
No.
So this,
still a lot of fun.
This love affair with cocaine began. And did you find that when you snorted some lines of coke, you could just go all night?
That's why you did it.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. And
that's
so,
why you did it. So you,
and it was so available. It was expensive.
It was expensive. And see, this is one of the things that they kept talking about how addictive it was.
Yeah.
You know, doctors and lawyers and, you know, people like this are doing it. And we're doing it on a big weekend when our buddies would get together and we would do a big weekend and we'd all pitch in and get some. And then, you know, blow our minds out. And then Monday morning, go back to work. But the pure economics of things, we couldn't afford to get addicted. It was too expensive.
Right.
It was too expensive.
When I started doing it, it was $100 a gram.
Yeah. Well,
so right off the gate, because of my...
So everybody had thrown a 20, and you'd just get a couple lines, and you'd go all weekend with it if you could. The problem was, when it ran out, it was like, we got to get another one. We got to find one more gram.
There's the addiction. Who knew that was setting in? We got to get more.
I know, right?
Got to get more.
And that was that's how cocaine works.
You'd be at a big house party, and most everybody was in the back bedroom doing lines.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yep.
But enjoyable and fun.
Yeah, at the time.
Enjoyable.
At the time. Shit.
You know? And you know what?
You're living the life.
At the time, again, I talk about that we didn't get addicted. We enjoyed it. It was fun. Monday came, you went to work.
Yeah. So I'm guessing things progress from there, though.
Oh, yeah. You know, we all survived. Everybody was having a great time. Friends started getting married. And each wedding, there was more coke than at the last one. The truckloads got bigger and bigger. And then, you know, my friends were married, and they didn't have the time to go out boozing.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to find new friends
to
play with. And again, the whole mindset is we didn't get addicted to the coke. So it was just recreational.
Yes.
Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Now, way fast forward to what got me was when I got into the crack. And I will tell you, a friend asked me if I wanted to.
So let me just, for the listener, because if you're younger, you weren't around during the crack epidemic. But what happened is in the 80s, a new form of cocaine that was manufactured called crack came out. And it was inexpensive to purchase and you smoked it. And it got you high instantaneously and was highly addictive.
Oh.
And so somebody, friend of yours, says, hey, you got to try this shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I held off for a while. Until we finally decided, all right, I'll give it a try. And started out rather slow.
Can you describe to the listener how it's different from snorting a line of coke to smoking crack?
Wow. The snorting the line was a routine. That was a process. Copping, getting it, cutting up the lines, and snorting it and feeling the drip mm-hmm. in the throat.
Yeah.
Okay. When you got the crack again, the process of getting it, but when you took that first hit and exhaled, you just felt your whole body relax and go down and just...
So the intensity is the difference, right?
Oh, definitely. And one thing with the coke, the powder coke, that got you fired up. The crack I found...
Different feeling, different effect.
No idea.
Yeah.
Different effect. You were still up. Listen, it kept you up for days. You know, I would stay up 3 days, 4 days on the stuff. And you had to maintain. I would try to fall asleep at night. And I couldn't leave a little bit on the counter. If there was a little bit,
you're going to do it.
Leave it for morning.
And so the addictive nature of crack was exponentially higher. Because you talked about snorting lines of coke recreationally. We were not going to get addicted.
Yeah.
With crack, it's a whole different animal because you smoke it and you get that intensity and then you want to do more.
Oh, want to do more.
And if it's there, you're going to do it.
Yeah, because I would... sensibly think, leave that little chunk for morning, get some sleep, and you need to go to work.
Yeah, it's not happening, though.
Not happening. Be up all night. And then,
it's calling you.
Oh, trying to fall asleep
and
on it.
And can you, for the uninitiated with the whole crack thing, how was it sold and what was the price like compared to a gram of powdered coke?
Well, I remember starting out the first time having the kid go and get a 20 piece, $20. For
like McNuggets?
It was a nugget.
Yeah,
20 piece McNuggets.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was cheap. I would try to make that last. And I could make that last probably 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay? Where a lot of people would take a $20 hit and do it in one hit. You know, I thought that was a waste. I never had a great capacity for marijuana smoking. You know, I had to take little hits because otherwise I'd just cough my head off.
Yeah.
Same with the crack. I just took little hits to maintain.
Mm.
I didn't want to burn out. I just wanted to maintain. I wanted to be able to operate, you know.
How long did it take before, looking back now, how long did it take before you think you had an addiction to crack? Was it real quick?
I will say probably... 3 months.
Wow.
Well, a lot of people say the first time they smoked it, they started their addiction. Because it did something. It reached something in them that they were not going to let go of.
Well, it definitely did start my addiction. But I didn't know how intense.
Yeah.
I didn't really know how intense. Because I was trying to keep it light and slow and under control.
And this whole time you're using alcohol with it, too. You're drinking.
Somewhat. Listen, alcohol took a back seat. To the crack.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Definitely took it back because I didn't want to ruin the buzz of the crack, of the high.
Oh, sure.
So it wasn't when I smoked or when I snorted cocaine, you would do the coke to drink more. With the crack, I would do the crack and not want to do the alcohol.
Yeah.
Enjoy that buzz off.
That was the end all, huh?
Yeah, it really was. And
Now, is it the same thing with the progression? You're ramping up your usage, thinking about it when you're not doing it, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah. And when it had a grip on me, man, I couldn't stop. And I didn't understand why. When I first got into it, finally after, I don't know, 6-9 months, not having money, running out, you know, I finally put it down. I don't know how, but I put it down. And I stopped for about 3 months. No problem. No withdrawal, no.
Wow.
And then one of the people called me 3 months later and said, hey, why don't you, you know, come on down? And I did. And son of a gun, took a little taste, and it was right back off to the races.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. Right back off to the races and worse. And when I got back into it now, I couldn't understand how before I stopped.
Oh.
And this time I can't.
And you're like, it's not happening for me.
I can't stop. I know I should. I know I need to because I'm going through money like crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, at the time I had some good paying jobs and I'm not keeping money.
Are there any other
I
consequences?
Just can't stop. One of the red flags as this progressed was with work. I always had a good work record,
mm-hmm.
Was not on the radar, cannot stand anybody who is an attendance problem, okay? Because you got a job, you got to go to work.
Yeah.
And so I went to work.
Yeah.
And I was not an attendance problem, was not on the radar until later. It didn't take long.
How long? How long into your, so you quit, then you came back. How long did it take before it really started having an effect on your life from an outside standpoint?
Probably 3 months.
Okay.
Probably 3 months getting back into it.
And you're hitting it on the daily.
Well, yeah. Now, here's the deal. I would start on Thursday, maybe Thursday night.
Okay.
Okay? Because once I started, I had to stay up all night. So I'd have to stay up all night. Now, at the time, I had a job driving limousine part-time. So I'm driving limousine on Saturday. I got to stay up for that.
Yeah, of course.
So if I'm picking up on Thursday night, staying up all Thursday night, going to work on Friday, okay, using at work, and now I got to get more Friday night to stay up, and then Saturday I got to use it while I'm driving so I stay awake, and then Sunday we'll lay off. Sunday
day of rest.
No day of rest.
It was not the Sabbath for crack.
No.
The demon raised its head. I am not done with you.
Yeah.
It's like a dog that grabs something in his teeth and shakes it. Yeah. I am not done with you.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so is this where all your money's going?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And thank God, the apartment that I was living in, the people, I think I was like, at most 4 months behind on my rent.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And thank God they were pounding on my door. I was a good tenant for them.
How much do you think you're spending a week when you were in it?
I probably, I had to be spending $400 or $500.
Yeah, it was basically a paycheck.
My paycheck, yeah. You know, because I'm not paying my rent.
You know, and here's the kind of fucked up thing, too. And it's, you know, it's the same way with every addiction. Is that you find yourself in a position where you know you have to pay the bare minimum of bills to get by in this world. And yet, you just don't. And you put it into your satisfying your addiction, your craving, and you figure, well, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, they're not going to turn off my water. They're not going to turn off my fucking heat. And then all of a sudden they're turning off your heat, and you're like, well...
I got coats.
Yeah, well, that was the most depressing thing ever. Twice did my power get shut off.
Yeah.
And to me, there's nothing more depressing than that, because you're 100% right, Mark. Two of the things that I made sure that I paid was my rent, so that I had
a place to exist, yeah.
And car.
Mm. Transportation, so you could get more crack.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so those things I stayed up on, but... got way behind on my rent. And thank God they weren't pounding on my door. And they lived right below me.
Yeah.
We lived in the same house. I was on the second floor. They were down below me. And seeing my action of going out.
Now,
2 o'clock in the morning.
So you're spending, you know, $500 a week. If you had been making $2,000 a week, would you have spent $2,000?
Oh, I'm sure.
Isn't
I'm
that
sure.
crazy?
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, that is addiction right there, you know.
It had a hold of me.
Sometimes when we look back, we're fortunate we didn't make a lot of money during that period of our lives because it could have killed us. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And let me tell you, when I got that apartment, three-bedroom flat with a full front porch, $300 a month, and I thought at first, oh, my God, how am I going to pay this rent? Oh, my God, you know. And that went by the wayside entirely.
Yeah. So So you fast forward a couple more months into your usage, and what's going on?
Well, my sister and I worked at the same place.
Uh-huh.
We had the same place that we worked at, and she was watching me, and everybody else at work was watching me. I was like losing weight, unbelievable. And fast forward to December of, had to be 98, a girl that I worked with, she called me one night and said, Michael, if I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me what's wrong with you, she said I'd be rich.
Oh.
And it was right at the point
so
when
everybody
I was ready.
Sees it.
Oh, God, yeah, I looked a mess.
Yeah.
And so.
Did you think you were pulling it off, though?
Oh, God, yes. Are you kidding? Again, as long as I'm not on the radar, but a little bit, I'm starting to hit the radar at work with some lateness. But skating by on it. So finally, this girl calls me and says, what's going on? I said, hang on. I'll call you back. So I had to go out because I was on my way to score.
Yep.
And I score, and I come back, and I call her. And I said, Julie, I'm smoking crack.
Holy shit.
And she said, thank God, we thought you had cancer.
Oh, my God.
Thank God you're smoking crack.
Yeah.
We thought you had cancer.
That's because what it looks like. Shit, yeah.
I was emaciated. I just looked like shit, and I didn't know it. So Julie ended up telling my sister, and February one.
How'd you feel about Julie at that point?
Oh,
that was okay.
Oh yeah.
That she
told
her sister.
Because you know what? One of the things I realized is it was getting to the point where I had to tell somebody.
Oh, because so you
I
were
was,
really realizing?
I was, yeah, that I was just.
You were helpless.
Yeah.
I was helpless. This stuff had me.
So that was a moment when she did this.
It was.
A little timely.
It was a godsend. It was unbelievable because, yes, it was perfect timing, and I was ready to tell somebody. But, of course, I swore not to tell my sister, which she said she wouldn't. And so in February, my sister called and said, oh, you know, can you take me to work tomorrow morning? I said, yeah. Well, now I'm so bad into the addiction that now I'm letting the sellers use my car at night.
So you get a little bit of rock if you let them use your car.
Oh yeah, yep. That's how far down I had gone. And so I said, now look, tomorrow morning I got to bring the car back on time because I got to pick my sister up for work, and you don't know what she's like. Yeah, they weren't on time.
They're so trustworthy though.
Oh yeah. Little did I know, she had people at her house ready to pull the intervention.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it was supposed to be like 7:30 that I was supposed to pick her up.
Yeah.
And I didn't get there till like 9.
Did all the interventionists leave by then?
No, everyone was still there.
Oh, but they were pissed off at this
point. Their letters got way longer.
Oh. Well, of course, I don't know that they're there.
Right, but you walk in and there's this.
And I realize, you know, something's going on. As soon as I walked in and John and his wife walked out, I knew what was up.
Okay.
And I thought, thank God, it's finally over.
So it was a relief for you.
It really was. It was a relief, yes.
Yeah. I mean,
so the intervention was impactful.
Oh, it was very impactful.
Because I've got somebody that is thinking about doing one of those, and I'm just curious about that.
There's a show, Intervention,
well,
of course.
Yes, there is.
And oftentimes you see people walk in, and they're like, fuck you.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do it.
They're not done.
So that's, as easy as it looks to do, it's nothing for you and I to do. The professionals have to do, people in the business. And that's why this John worked at the rehab.
Okay.
So they knew what they were doing, okay? It's nothing for you and I to do
without
training.
Yeah.
as much. And I've been involved in somebody doing an intervention, and it worked on his father, and I helped drive him down to Pennsylvania to the rehab. So they can be effective. For me, it was. And I'll tell you what, that morning, if they said we're going to Niagara Falls and put you over the falls in a barrel, I would have gone.
Wow.
Just so that, to get out of my...
That was the point of desperation.
Just to get out of my sister's living room.
Yeah.
Oh, are you kidding? To get out of my sister's living room with all of them looking at me.
The gift of desperation.
Yeah.
It was staring you at the face.
Oh, boy.
So what happened? What happened that morning?
Down to rehab I go.
Like right that morning? They said, let's go?
Oh, yeah. Nice. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
I left my car at my sister's house. They were there to... These people were there to take me back to my apartment, get clothes.
Did they get it all straightened out at your job for you as well?
Oh, yeah, because, again, my sister worked there.
Yeah.
And so that...
So you got no excuse... You want help.
So down there I go. What is interesting today, I realize that, you know, I go into rehab and I'm thinking that, number one, I don't have an alcohol problem because I was not really addicted to alcohol.
Sure.
I didn't wake up and need alcohol. Once I got into the crack, man, I needed that. Okay. So I'm down in rehab and I'm a little different because I'm not the alcoholic, you know, I just have to give this stuff up. And I'll give that stuff up. And in time, I'll go back to drinking because that really wasn't the problem.
It's in the back pocket.
That wasn't the problem. So I loved rehab. What is amazing to me to this day is when you go into rehab, I had absolutely no idea.
Sure.
How to stop drinking or drugging.
Yeah.
How do you do this? And then you go in there and you find out, they've got these steps. They've got a procedure. They've got steps and traditions and a procedure.
Okay,
for
so this place
who
was...
Who had any idea how to do this?
This was like step-based rehab.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you mean I'm not the first person to do this?
Yeah, no. They'd been around before.
So your rehab experience is positive for you.
Oh, it was very positive. Yep. Mm-hmm. It was very positive. And one of the things, I've got to have friends. I like to be around people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have fun. And that's one of the things... That, thank God, in rehab, there was a great fellowship. You know, we made friends. Now, with that said, there was probably 30-plus people.
Oh, so this was like a group type.
Oh, yeah, big rehab. And, they would take us out to meetings. And I was in there, 35 days the first time?
Can I just rewind just a hair?
Yes.
Start of your rehab, did you have to detox from the crack?
You know, not...
Really?
Not...
So the physical part of it wasn't killing you?
No.
Huh.
No.
So your addiction was so mental.
I mean, I had to do detox because that's part of their program.
Right,
okay,
right.
So you've got to do
but
detox.
But it wasn't
a
killer
maybe.
For you?
No. No. I don't remember it being violent.
Severe on your body?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, got into doing the groups. Mm-hmm. We had right away and... Going out to meetings and what have you.
So were you like a 28-day guy?
I'm sorry?
Were you 28 days in?
The first time, 35.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They gave you an extra week.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in 99, if you had good insurance, they could keep you 35 days.
Okay.
But when I got out, I started going to meetings. And, I mean, they talked about 90 and 90, and I thought... It's a little aggressive, you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know about this 90 and 90 shit, but we'll hit some meetings, you know. And thank God I liked it right away. Made friends with somebody who was in there. He needed a ride. I picked him up. We started going to meetings, and I got into it.
What did you like?
The camaraderie.
So people just
the,
like
the
you?
The fellowship. Yeah, yeah. And finding out I'm no different.
There you go.
I'm no different. But that still didn't sink in until my second time in.
So you go to the first rehab, you get out and you start going to meetings. What happens?
Got involved right away with going to meetings and partaking in a meeting that was at that rehab once a week.
Okay.
And I started in-house. doing in-house. They would have a meeting. They had meetings come in there most every night. But I started partaking in one of them that at that time was on Sunday night. So I'd be doing that meeting. And one of the things I realized is I was telling on myself. When I went down there to rehab and hear the patients, you know, and you're telling your story, I'm telling on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want them to know is that it wasn't that difficult. I didn't find it that difficult to do this recovery thing, going to meetings. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to share with other people and bring that down to these guys. And what I found is what it did for me. Being able to tell and then having people come up to you after the meeting and ask questions.
Felt so good.
Oh, my God. The whole concept of you can't keep it unless you give it away, which now is starting to play out in my life, and I loved it. And I still do to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I still do. There's
so, like I always say, you were a user, now you're useful.
During that first, part of your sobriety, something goes wrong, right?
Well, yeah.
Mark.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Now, hold it. I don't want to come out like I'm all sainted and what have you, because I didn't do the steps and get a sponsor and all that kind of stuff because I didn't think I had to.
Because you were so deep into the fellowship. Well, you're like, the group is my sponsor.
But again, I wasn't an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay. I'm going to meetings. I'm saying I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't like saying it.
Yeah.
And I didn't really believe it, but I knew I had this problem. And that's all I had to give up. That's what I had to give up.
Okay.
Doing all the steps and whatever, God bless you, but I didn't really need to. But going to the meetings and loving everything. Then started playing with the idea that I bet I could take a taste. Not that I ever would, but I could probably take a taste.
It was just the idea.
Right. In other words,
romancing it.
In other words, I got this.
Well, I didn't want to be that bold and arrogant, but I bet I could take it. Not that I would. I'm not that stupid,
no.
You know. But I bet I could.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, you know. Not that I would.
No.
Until.
How stupid does it sound? But that's what was going on.
Of course. Sure.
And the key, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. Because you know what they're going to say.
Yeah, they're going to say, you're going to if you
so
don't.
So as usual, there's a big dialogue going on in your head.
It's a disease that tells you you don't have a disease.
Exactly.
It'll talk you into just about anything.
Lo and behold, who popped in front of me one day?
Your dealer.
Somebody that I knew that never had it when I was active. Now he's got some, and so I took that little
taste. Got some catching up to do.
And guess what?
Back off to the races.
Like I never left it.
Haven't heard that before.
Like I never left it. Yeah. Unbelievable. And I got into it pretty.
You know, it's funny, but the nature and the mechanisms of addiction are, there's some things that are the same across the board, and that's one of them.
That's right.
You know, this mechanism of exactly the way it works, that's why the people in the rooms can tell you before it happens. Here's how it works. Here's what's going to happen if you don't do this. These are only suggestions, but we could tell you from experience. If this program isn't followed, if you half-ass it, half-measure it, whatever, this is what happens to people because we've seen it a million times.
Exactly, but not me.
Right.
Because I'm different.
You're unique.
I'm not that bad. I'm not really an alcoholic.
Oh, I wish you could see the acting right now.
Yeah. Yes, he's very emotive.
Oh, yeah. He's like emotive. Not me, you know.
But I'm not trying to be arrogant or anything and think I'm special, but it just didn't all pertain to me.
So how long are you back out there?
Oh, once I picked up... let's see, that was probably around March to August.
Okay. And so you're obviously trying to hide it at all costs.
At all costs. And now I'm going through a prom season, driving a limo, okay? And, of course, wedding season, I got to use while I'm driving.
But there's a difference this time, isn't there? You've got some program in your head.
I do, and we're just going to use to maintain. I don't want to fry myself. I just want to maintain so that I can keep working. It didn't take long, and I was right back to a mess again.
Is anyone starting to notice?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. At this time, for a short while, I had, for about a year, I had a roommate. He and his wife had a big falling out, so he moved in with me. And he saw it. And, of course, my sister at work saw it again.
Man, you should have changed jobs.
Yeah, well...
In hindsight, it would have killed me.
I was making too much money. Finally, one morning, as a matter of fact, we happened to be in the parking garage, walking in, and she said, "You better get yourself back into rehab."
Oof.
And I was a mess. And I got to my desk and just started crying.
Yeah.
And it was over for the second time. So back into rehab I go a second time. And now I realize and start to accept I am an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I am an alcoholic. I am no
it's
different.
It's all part of the deal.
I am no different. I am no different. I thought I could go out and drink, but I can't. I am an alcoholic. And so the whole program took on a whole different flavor. I'd been going to meeting. Listen, I would go to a meeting and then go out and get high. Or get high first and then go to the meeting.
Yeah, that's not untypical. Yet.
Oh, yeah.
So you're in this rehab for the second time. But now it's different.
Now it is a lot different. And, yes, I do need to be there. And I am an alcoholic. Now I'm accepting.
So you had started drinking a little bit again?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you were still.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. No.
I understand.
Christmas
so it came
time.
Out of the back pocket.
Oh, yeah. Christmas time. And I'll tell you what, we are at my another sister's in out of town. And my sister who lives here, she saw me with that beer in my hand and glared at me across the kitchen. And
that's called the stink eye in the South.
Stink. Oh, my God.
She was
God.
Giving me the stink eye.
Yeah.
And I just looked at her and brushed her off thinking, you know, this isn't the problem.
Well.
This isn't the problem. I'll be fine. Yeah.
Now, when you went back to smoke, were you drinking with that, too, at the time?
Again, a little bit.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I just really liked doing the crack.
Yeah.
And not the
alcohol. Because I know for
so
a lot
much.
Of people, once their inhibitions get a little bit lower, they're done.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I say that I didn't drink that much, but it doesn't take that much to lower my inhibitions.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's what took me back out and thinking, I bet I could take a taste. Not that I ever would.
Not that I ever would.
There it is again.
Yeah, exactly. That whole unbelievable time.
You're in this rehab. You go through it again. This time it's different for you, and it's in your gut now, right?
You're starting recovery.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let's hear about
and
it.
And still going to meetings. And doing it like I was before. You know, every day of the week. One of the great things about my life is that. As far as meetings go, my recovery life, there was nothing to hamper it. There was no wife, no kids, no job restrictions or anything. I worked an 8-to-5. So
you had the time.
Had the time, and it was fitting in perfect. Loving it. Loved being affiliated with the rehab and going down there. Probably two or three times a week.
But this time it's different, right?
This time it's sincere.
Yeah.
This time I know.
Okay.
This time I know I've got to do this. I'm an alcoholic. And realizing life without it is getting much better. It's getting much easier.
You're experiencing some of the promises.
Exactly. Those are coming through. And life is just getting better. Now, in there, all along, I'm trying to reach out to the new patients at this rehab. And of course, you know, they tell us sometimes we have to step over bodies. Well, I would watch that. I would see that and other people going back out, and it would tear me apart. It would tear me apart. Some people that you make good friendships with, and then they go back out. And so I had to learn that whole thing. And finally, a counselor many years later told me, he said, "Don't put more into their recovery than they do."
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I had to learn the
and
same thing.
I was doing.
I can't
oh my
want
God.
Somebody to get sober more
oh
than they
God.
Do.
Oh my God! I was doing your recovery. I was doing your recovery yeah. and mine, and so that took me a little while to learn, but thank God. I
so
can
some
really
step
learn.
Work.
Oh yeah, yeah. And getting back to the steps, yes. One of the things I realized too, my first time. What I didn't do, I didn't really get a sponsor. I didn't really do the steps.
Okay? That's pretty big you were able to figure that out.
Oh, well, yeah, because, you know, I was loaded with contempt for investigation. All this shit you guys were talking about, oh, my God, you're a little dramatic, okay?
Yeah, insanity. I hated that one.
Hated you for using that. That's, come on.
Yeah.
I'm insane. Well, when I keep doing the same thing and expect different results, yeah, that is insanity. Fit me perfect. So I slowly came around to all the concepts, all the steps, and realizing, yes, I am an alcoholic and that I have to do it properly. So I did get a sponsor this time, and nice. I did go through the steps. And, of course, one of the things I tried to do was get a very smart and well-respected sponsor, a man by the name of Neil, many years ago, was very well-respected in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the, back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into back to basics, and Neil and I finally met at Dunkin' Donuts to do the fourth step. And anybody who knew this guy, he was no nonsense.
I knew Neil. He was old school.
He was old school. And you weren't going to tell him anything that was going to shake him too much.
Right.
And I certainly didn't. As a matter of fact, I wondered if I had stuff to tell him, you know, because I didn't have a long litany of crimes
so those
or
things
bad
that you,
things.
You
or,
thought you were so special about all yeah. of a sudden certainly weren't.
Yeah, I am not special. We got through the steps and what have you. Neil was terrific. And that's how I took a few people through as well, doing the steps.
And so you get true sobriety, right? And how has your life changed?
It is just so much easier. I can't believe the peace and the serenity. And one of the things that really upset me in between when I went back out so many years ago is because I had known a period of sobriety. I'd known a period of peace and serenity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pissed the second time that I lost that.
Yeah, how could I have done that? It was right there in front of my face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I blew it. But it just made me appreciate it all the more the second time.
So you're experiencing all the benefits of the program. You're in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I also know something else about you. What are you doing now? Like, what do you love to do now?
Go to meetings and share this and try to help other people with it. I can't believe how much I've gotten into this. When they said so long ago, 90 meetings in 90 days, I thought, oh, God, you know, I'll go to some meetings, but that's a little aggressive. I'm at meetings every day. And it's not because I'm afraid I'm going to drink. It's to help others. It's my social. But the biggest part is trying to help other people.
And you're the first person and the person that I actually saw that happening with. Like, I would see you coming in with complete strangers all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just like, dude,
who is this guy?
I know, right? Is he like a chaperone or something? You know,
Hyde Piper of AA.
You know, you go to the local rehab a lot.
I'm down there just about every week and have been for 25 years.
And that's where you were, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
Awesome.
So trying to reach out to those guys, and that's where I find a lot of people and try to get them into this new way of life.
Yep. So what do you tell the newcomer? What's your secret to get them here? Because you do it.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired?
There you go.
Are you really sick and tired of being sick and tired? This is an easy way. It's not that difficult. And it's so much better. Today, it is so much easier living clean and sober and a lot less expensive.
Oh, God, yes.
And that face right now is beaming.
Yeah,
I love it.
Mike, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time on the Glum Lot Podcast, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mike.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.